You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, I'm delighted to have Dr. Carmen Bolter return for an exciting two-part show. Dr. Bolter is a professor at the University of Calgary in Canada who has just completed her 25th trip to Egypt. Since 1995, Carmen has been leading sacred site journeys to Egypt, the Mediterranean, Peru, and Tibet. She has traveled to 51 countries exploring ancient mysteries. Her new 2-DVD set, The Pyramid Code, is a magnificent revelation and in-depth exploration of the little-known secrets of Egypt in 5 complete programs. Documentary channel named The Pyramid Code the top documentary of 2010. And I recommend it very highly because I think it's the best one around. She is also the author of Angels and Archetypes, a multidimensional map of spirituality and feminine goddess mythology and their contemporary relevance and return. And both can be found on her site at www.pyramidcode.com. And there will also be, for those who are interested, there are some incredible, mind-blowing pictures that are available. If you go to the site pyramidcode.com and just put in your name and email address, they will be sent to you, and you can take a look at these as Carmen is describing what she saw and what she felt. And believe me, you got to see this. So, with that build up, let's get the ball rolling and welcome Carmen back to the show now. Hi, Carmen.
Hi, Lance.
How are you?
I'm just great, thanks. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. You just recently returned from Egypt, yes?
Yes. A couple of weeks ago.
What was one of the most startling changes that you noticed in this last visit?
Actually, there's a lot of differences in Egypt. I had been there in March, and I was really surprised to see just how the people actually seem to be really overloaded. And it's really getting stressful out there, to tell you the truth. But we managed to do the trip, and there was some incredible photos that I was able to take, as you were mentioning there. After the group left, I was at the Sphinx guest house, and I saw this apparition in my eye. I could see it with my real eyes. And then I got my new 18-megapixel camera out to see if it would pick up what I was seeing, but not as clearly. And then I got these photos that look like the Holy Grail of the sacred feminine. There's no other way to describe it. I think they're up there with the Norway spiral. They are just incredible. And
oh, yeah.
If you look at the pictures, they can't be a lens flare because
no.
You can see that the camera doesn't move.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So you can still see the pyramids are in the same place. So it's like this apparition came and it started forming a disc. And so you can see the base. There's like a circular globe and then the stem and another globe, and then a goblet with an aura around it. And you're looking at these pictures now. You've just seen them. So it's like,
yeah.
What do we have here? Now, the only explanation I have for it is that we've moved into the seventh day of the galactic underworld, which is the last step before the final stage of the Mayan calendar.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that the sacred masculine and the sacred feminine have to be in balance. And
mm-hmm.
if it's only about patriarchal ways of being and thinking, it will no longer be supported. And because a lot of my work has been about seeing the matriarchal aspects of Egypt and how the sacred feminine was honored, but also the insistence on a balance, to me, it feels like the Holy Grail and the real prize, that we're actually arriving to a point where the cosmos, the universe, is supporting this new way of being and thinking and returning us to balance. So I think it's pretty exciting.
Well, no kidding. Anybody who gets these pictures is going to be absolutely blown away because, as you said, it does form a chalice, a beautiful, I mean, I can't even describe it. It's so amazing. And it morphs a little bit, but it's clear. You know, it's clear what it is. And then there's the other photographs have some interesting stuff in them, too. They look almost like, I don't want to say, they're like green, almost, saucer-like formations.
Yes, it's pretty hard not to think of them that way, especially when you see them. They look like they're flying.
Yeah,
but you can also see them forming. Now, the thing that was particularly interesting with this group, I had 36 people with me, and we were picking up orbs. And I think most people are familiar with orbs now.
Oh, yeah.
But the thing is that just like crop circles are becoming more complex over time, so are orbs.
Oh.
And so you can see the cellular matrix inside. Some of them have little rainbows that are attached to the various cells within them, but they used to just be round on the outside. Then they started having geometric shapes on the outside and then auras around those. But these are not orbs.
Oh,
They are something else. And there's one photo there with two that are kind of flying. It looks like they're flying past each other. But it's almost like you can see the angles. It's just quite the phenomena. And to think this was all going on during the Sound and Light show on the Giza Plateau. And it's a phenomena that now our cameras are seemingly able to capture. But I'm telling you, the feeling was, you know, comparable. It's like when I look at the pictures, I'm like, exactly. You know, there was something quite magnificent going on. And the energetics are showing up in the photographs. So we've got some very, very interesting shots from the group. And there was others that were also like apparitions that had shapes. So they weren't orbs either. So some kind of light being, you know, I'm going to analyze these pictures and continue with it, but it's, you know, I guess we got to take it at face value as well. Now, you asked about, you know, what was most remarkable in Egypt, aside from the stress that the people are enduring there.
Right.
The ceiling of the Temple of Dendera has been cleaned. And prior, we were able to see very dark taupe and almost chocolate brown, and through that you could see that there were images behind it, but these ceilings are 30 to 40 feet high. And so now that they've cleaned them, they're not allowed to add paint. They are allowed to remove fungus and soot and that sort of thing.
Mm.
And so when I was there in March, the whole right side of the first type of style hall of the Temple of Hathor had the ceiling cleaned, but this time the left side was cleaned. And so what this is a star map. It is a very large story. You see reptilian beings. You see star configurations. And so it's never been seen before because they're just in the process of cleaning it. And the scaffolding was still there on the left side. And the watchman invited me in, and I just went bam, 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 and took pictures. And so I can blow up pictures because of the high resolution of my camera.
Yeah,
then look at these details. And so this is a tremendous gift because you're not going to find a lot of people who are analyzing this because very few people have even seen it.
Right.
And so what you see is reptilian beings walking up in steps. There are snakes that are crisscrossed. There's a four-headed ram with wings. And then you've got all the star configurations and... So I've been working with how the pyramid fields are actually a sky-ground correlation and a reflection. So Robert Bovall established that the three pyramids, Giza, the Great Pyramid, Second Pyramid, and Third Pyramid, were the belt of Orion.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rest of the pyramid fields actually line up. And so I've just gone into the Starry Night Pro, and I've been working with the Super Galactic Grid, and looking for configurations that stay together through large expanses of time. So when you look at our zodiac with the constellations, Sagittarius, Aries, all of those that we're familiar with, that follows the path, the apparent path of the sun, which is called the ecliptic. but that's relative to our solar system. So then we've got the galactic grid, and what I'm working with is a supergalactic grid, which seems to have a pattern that follows the pyramid fields in the six distinct sites that I'm talking about as the band of peace in the pyramid code. So it goes Sirius, and that's represented by Isis, and then Orion. So it's almost like going up the chakras, which you see in Nui. And you always see in the star map in the ceiling of the Temple of Dendera that Isis is standing behind Osiris, and he's got his sword pointed, and then there's seven stars, and that's the Pleiades. But then what comes after that? And then Colin Wilson's been talking about Cygnus and the importance and, you know, rivaling the idea of Osiris, Orion being on the Giza Plateau. So I put it into this configuration, and Cygnus is the swan, but it's flying directly along the meridian of the supergalactic grid, and it's a bird. And so if you think of the great cosmic mother, the goddess, that would be the crown chakra. And then what have we been staring at forever in Egypt? Isis wearing a bird on her head. And then the next point is the center of the Milky Way. And I'm like, how can they have known? How could they possibly have known? So we have these sophisticated programs now that we can trace it, but it's been really hard for us to even get the question that we would even look. So what I'm ascertaining this to be, because the configuration holds together throughout time, I've run it like 99,000 BC and forward. You know, so you can just let it run. And if it's just regular stars, they kind of break apart and they fly around all over the place. But this configuration stays together throughout time. So what are we looking at here? And so this is cosmic of great proportions. And so when we have been looking at Egyptian symbolism, we couldn't understand for years that they understood quantum physics, they understood the biology, and they had two basic concerns about how do we get here to the planet and what happens when we leave. And in terms of incarnations, like how, you know, what is the physical biology that allows us to incarnate on the planet? But they had no word for death. And so they would cycle, they would west, they'd say what they were westing. And they understood that the soul doesn't really die. So it's just like, it's quite exciting, to say the very least.
Well, absolutely. Now, how might that tie into the various cycles of the Mayan calendar?
Well, okay, first of all, 3113 BC to 2012 AD is one cycle of the long count calendar of the Mayan calendar. Well, the first dynasty was 3113 BC. So it's like one phase, but the whole thing goes back even farther. And so the Bakhtun cycle takes us through, and the Mayan calendar looks, and the Vedic calendar also looks back to the precession of the equinoxes. It's 26,000 years. But the Egyptians were completely aware of this. They coded this right into the artifacts and the star maps. And so it totally relates to the Mayan calendar.
Well, and according to your research, didn't they conceivably have the technology to literally use technology that was like Star Trek's what do they call that machine where you beam to
beam
another
me up,
location?
Scotty.
Beam me up, Scotty.
Teleportation.
I've said that a lot lately.
Teleportation.
That's it.
Okay, so what I've ascertained here is that the Egyptians were masters of the transmutation of the atom. And they were able to use high-level technology to make free, non-polluting, renewable energy. It had to do with blowing the hydrogen and the oxygen molecules apart from the water from a water molecule. But our bodies are 70% water. And so the high-level initiates were able to transmute the atom within themselves. And so this led to their ability to be psychic, for manifestation, for alchemy, for bilocation, and teleportation.
Wow.
And it's all the same function. So once they were able to harness this, all the other abilities came to them. And so, you know, my research is on the ground, but a lot of my hypotheses have come from past life memory. And so then going and checking things and verifying them in the field. And so understanding how everything works together and how they work with huge, huge quartz crystals.
Like, yeah,
expanses of floor hundreds of feet across, and these enormous 6-foot laser cut altars of crystal, and they're quite numerous in Egypt. And so we have evidence of the high level technology.
Now, some people have claimed that the crystals were able to create a kind of a multiple level cloud or atmospheric barrier that's kind of kept the Earth in a tropical zone or in a neutral zone. And I don't know if that was during the time of the pyramids or if that was long before or what, but supposedly it was crystal technology.
Well, there's plenty of that around, and if you think now, everything, practically everything we use has got a teeny tiny little crystal in it. Our watches, a DVD, Ethernet cables, they're all based on crystals.
Oh,
radios,
yeah,
all of that. And these were enormous crystals. But the thing that we have to understand is that our focus in history has been 6,000 years or so, not going way back, like 50,000 years.
Right,
even though people like Michael Cremo support and find much evidence of the extreme antiquity of man, our school system and everything doesn't support the idea that we could have come and had higher knowledge in another age. And
yes,
so
or had even many ages.
Many. And we're told that we're the smartest we've ever been and we've got the highest technology.
Oh,
that,
please.
Yes, exactly. That keeps us locked in to a way of being and thinking. So
right,
all of what you were talking about with the force fields and the crystals and all of that most assuredly would have existed during a golden age, which would have been at least 13,000 years ago. But with the precession of the equinoxes, we add 26,000 years to each, and there was a period of time for these golden ages as well.
Right.
And then we started tumbling down denser and denser and denser and denser, and now we're at the bottom of the Kali Yuga cycle, which is the Iron Age, the age of plastic as well, and we're actually in the densest time of of this cycle.
Yeah.
And that's why we've got blood from death instead of blood from life, and there's just a lot of distortion, and we need to expand our way of thinking in order to be able to comprehend how all this fits together. And so that's what the Pyramid Code is helping us do by looking at a new chronology and the evidence that's right on the ground.
Wow. Well, you know, I've heard of non-polluting energy for cars. I've heard of various developments where they're splitting the hydrogen and so on and so forth. But every time I hear something, it seems as if either the patent gets bought up or the person mysteriously dies or they get a great deal of money and they disappear. Mm-hmm. So it's conceivable that this technology has existed for hundreds of thousands of years and is known to inner circles of the elite, if you want to call them. And it's fairly common knowledge, I think, at this point among insiders that those people have technology that's at least 10,000 years ahead of what we have presently. So, and then that goes back to Tesla and J.P. Morgan being unwilling to fund Tesla because they can't make any money on it. So, you know, we're at a point where we really have to make a decision about how we're going to live, if we're going to be free or if we're going to continue to be enslaved by the ruling classes.
Yep, couldn't have said it better. And you're tying a lot together there, and it's true. The people who are running the oil cartels and all of that need us to be dependent on oil.
Right.
So think about shipping and how much things cost, like to send a container to Africa costs like $30,000-$40,000.
Yeah.
It's like, and that's all the oil that's costing the amount, and everything's going up. We've got hyperinflation. You know, and it's easy to say we should decide and not let them, but they actually have had the power and the control, and with all the money they've been making through the Federal Reserve and everything else and making, you know, interest, collecting interest on money that doesn't even exist.
Right.
Pretty much bought up all the media, and they
right,
do have the power because
right,
they've used the control to get it. Now, how we shake that loose, and, you know, like they want to charge people for, you know, they want to forbid you growing your own food and, you know, people for going off the grid, and, you know, they really have everything sewn up, and, you know, we've got to take our hats off to the brilliance of this, but you're right, if we don't change it, you know, what's the hope for the rest of time?
Exactly. And the big problem that I see on the horizon is the lack of awareness due to the very fact that there is a circle that keeps reinforcing itself, and that is the circle of education and the circle of media that is allowed to exist, which reinforces the same things, that we're physical bodies, that, you know, have lots of sex, and if that doesn't grab you, they've got the church to, you know, rule over you and be an intermediary to whatever god their du jour. And so all of these bases are covered, very similar to the pyramid. You know, the top of the pyramid is the eye on the dollar. So we're subtly conditioned every day to see how subservient we are. And what with the scanners and the pat-downs, well, you know, they're just, it's almost as if they're putting the finishing touches on a beautiful piece of, a beautiful cake, you know. Well, let's put another piece of whipped cream here. We'll put some scanners. Oh, let's have some roving scanners. That would be fun. That'll get them. You know, I mean, if I were in their shoes, I don't know, I might be like that, but I'm not. So I think people need to be made aware of these things, and you are making people aware by bringing this ancient, profound knowledge into the light of day.
But the thing with the scanners is really obscene. I took 39 flights already this year.
Yay, yay, yay.
And, you know, like we worry about the little, you know, at the dentist getting an X-ray, and it's a teeny, teeny little point of radiation.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we'd be fried if we had 39 scans every year.
Oh, my God.
Not that everybody travels as much as I do. But the other thing, though, is that these scans do not prevent what they say they're going to prevent. And taking our water bottles doesn't stop terrorism.
No.
Right?
No.
Okay, and so... But many people are waking up. Like, I'm finding, you know, a casual conversation, meeting somebody just over coffee, and they know. And the guy sitting next to me on the plane, who's a basic, you know, redneck Albertan, he knows.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's not, and the internet has helped us tremendously, because we can be sharing photos instantly. We can be social networking and get the latest. And there are interviews and blog talk radio and this sort of thing. And
at
so people are waking up, and though, you know, they haven't really been taking care of the grid. The grid could go down.
Yeah.
And so I have this real sense of urgency that we've just got to get connected and get the answers as fast as we can, you know, and live through these times. And, you know, there's fear about 2012. I mean, in my experience, like, we all got a lot of energy. We spent 2 hours inside the Great Pyramid, with all three chambers open. We had sunrise between the paws of the Sphinx. And we took some pretty serious hits of energy because of that. And I think that, you know, everybody had trouble integrating and landing when they got back, but I think that our psychic natures are enhanced.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I've experienced this a lot with 25 trips to Egypt, where you almost can't contain the energy, and then it kind of integrates, and then you've got more abilities, which is exactly how it worked for the ancients. And so we actually ran a study when we were over there this time, took a baseline. There's a photonic emissions device that's actually very sophisticated Carillion photography, far, far more sophisticated than the old days of measuring someone's aura.
Right.
And so we took a baseline for everybody in the group in the hotel prior to going into the Great Pyramid. And then everybody got into the sarcophagus. We were doing energy work, and then everybody got their fields tested again, and then we did a second delayed post test, where we looked to see if the energy in the pyramid stayed with the person. And then, you know, I'm cross correlating that with, you know, are people meditators, are they vegetarian, you know, do they have a practice of doing qigong or tai chi or something like that. And I actually don't expect that necessarily those are the people who are going to have the greatest effect in their aura. And I have not been able to analyze the data yet, because it's still being calibrated and, you know, so it takes a while to do a study like that. But we're about to have some hard data about it. What is it? Is it the pyramid? Is it the proximity? Is it the telluric currents? You know, let's take some measurements here and see how this is affecting us, and full stop, if it's affecting us. But, you know, from a qualitative standpoint, with people reporting how they feel and how their psychic abilities are increasing, it seems that exposure to these kinds of energies really can change us. However, the collective is still feeding us that if you can't see it, it's not there, and you only live once, and all that stuff. And so I think that clouds people, and they get a little afraid to speak out or, you know, to test the waters and see if anybody else is feeling that or having similar experiences. But I think because of the energetics and the exponential increase and time moving faster and all of that, I think it's about to get blown out of the water where we can't hide from it anymore.
Yeah, yeah. I think you're absolutely right. And you mentioned the period 3113 BC to 2012 AD, and isn't that the cycle that the patriarchy was allowed to rule?
Yes, that's right.
And we can see the
results, yes.
Yeah.
And yes, in ancient times, it was the highest form of DNA was menstrual blood, and that's blood for life. And so there was the virgin mother and the crone, and so the virgin being represented by white, the mother by red, and the crone by black, three stages of the triple goddess. And so then when religion started, they started wearing the red, white, and black. They started wearing the pharaonic headdress, if you will, the pointed top, and that's, you know, that's also highly symbolic. But then they started using sacrificial lambs and getting blood from death, and now we've got this incredible bloodbath with millions of people, you know, being killed, and it's just, it's obscene, really, how that's going on. But in ancient times, it was all about leaving more for the children, respecting elders, and understanding that we were evolving as time went by, not devolution.
Yeah.
And so, yes, so when people think about dynastic Egypt, they think that's the whole of Egypt. But really, that's when the dynasties brought the patriarchy to Egypt as well. And so, you know, everything's about the masculine, and people, you know, we're looking through patriarchal lenses, and so we're perceiving things from the masculine viewpoint. But if you really look at Egypt, it's not that at all. There's plenty of honoring of the goddess and balance, balance, balance. Everything is about the balance between the masculine and the feminine, and that is what is supposed to be returning to us. And so with these pictures, first, the manuscript that led to the pyramid code was called Out of the Blue. So the fact that this sacred chalice is blue,
yes,
and the Holy Grail, we said Sangre Real, you know, the royal blood, and the whole tradition of Mary Magdalene and the story coming out that Jesus and Mary Magdalene were partners, and that Mary Magdalene was a high priestess, and that she taught him and helped him be initiated, and he helped her as well. But again, it sounded like they were equal, and they both had spiritual prowess and understood things. And so, you know, my company's been called Magdalena Productions for years, decades before, or at least a decade before the Da Vinci Code came out. So this whole storyline of how Mary Magdalene got a bad rap in the Bible, and the feminine got erased out of it, and the Council of Nicene saying, you know, reincarnation is outlawed, all of these things, you know, have contributed to us, to it being very unfashionable to talk about this sort of thing. But it's there, plain as day. And the problem with patriarchy is it's out of balance. And unsustainable.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, it seems that even if there were no cycles that were speeding up or coming to an end or changing and shifting the energies of our consciousness at this time, based on the nine levels of the pyramid, then regardless of that, there are so many disasters waiting to happen at the same time. I mean, you could rattle off probably 50 things without even having to think about it, things that man has done, mostly corporations and people who have a lot of money and a lot to lose, dumping things and doing things and destroying the earth and so on and so forth. So the genetically modified food and on and on and on, chemtrails, blah, blah, blah. So all of these things, it seems, are also headed for some kind of resolution or nexus point. And it looks like they might all end up being at the same time. I don't know.
Well, no one knows how this is going to turn out.
No, uh-uh.
And there are many, many psychics who have been pretty clear and able to predict. And there's something about this 2012 zone that is beyond their ability to predict. And many people say that we are creating with our intention. And so the outcome isn't written, which
right.
is why nobody can read it.
Right.
And so if we succumb and allow and succumb to fear and shut ourselves down, we may just get mowed over by this fear.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we intend and see the world peacefully, with everyone getting along, and you know, putting great detail into the visualization of the world we want,
mm-hmm.
With free energy and no income tax and, you know, no interest and that sort of thing, and finding
right,
a way
right.
to live where it's not a few people getting all the money.
Right. Living to a ripe old age, if not hundreds of thousands, maybe thousands of years without disease.
Yes, of course. And we can create that, and we know it.
Yeah.
And so it really is time for humanity to wake up and say no. But really, the powers that be need to somehow step aside. And I think, and I've said this, I've been saying this for 20 years, that there is a point where their energy is no longer able to function in this space, that they were allowed to take over for this 5,000 years, but mm-hmm. they're done. Goodbye. Now, I don't know how you get rid of it and what the process is, because they seem to be ratcheting up.
Yeah, it does seem that way.
And they're probably really scared, because the worst thing for them is that we know and that they've been found out.
Yes.
But many people stopped watching TV a long time ago, and they're, you know, and internet is a real gift, but then we hear that Obama has a kill internet switch, but can he or can't he take it down? And, you know, hopefully, you know, in this next period of time of great acceleration of consciousness, that we'll reach enough momentum to make a difference
yeah.
energetically. And no one knows how that will look, and I don't think it's fair for us to predict and say, I know how that's going to turn out, because who can know?
Right, right. Well, one thing for sure is that whatever happens, if we get through to the other side, there's a lot of excitement. There's a lot that is waiting for us that we haven't discovered yet. You know, 10,000 years of technology, and then maybe hundreds, millions of years of technology from various galactic confederations and space families that could help us. And so. At the least, there's technology that's been concealed from us for a good 100 years. And, you know, some of my guests have talked about bases on Mars, on the Moon, and Saturn, rings being engineered, and so on and so forth. So, in fact, there's a pyramid on Mars. So you mentioned that these could be also, in addition to whatever other purposes that they were, multidimensional purposes they serve, they could be used for just hopping from planet to planet.
Right, and you know, we're not really schooled in this kind of language. And what were the Egyptians doing? Now, Laird Scranton, who's featured in the Pyramid Code, is talking about a new interpretation of hieroglyphic, and he's looking at Dogon priests who could be very well descendants. And when the Islamics came, they just walked away and walked into Mali, East Africa, basically kept their language alive,
mm-hmm.
and he's finding real similarities with hieroglyphic. And they talk about ancestors who are teachers, who gave us ways of civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And Zachariah Sitchin talks about that with the Anunnaki, Nephilim.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not often in the conversation, but yet, if you're really into spirituality nowadays, many people channel. They're channeling
mm-hmm.
ascended masters. They're channeling high-level beings.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking low-level ghosts. We're talking
right.
the highest-level being. Well, it would really seem that the ancient Egyptians were in touch with their ancestral teachers or spiritual beings. You know, so when they say that, you know, the pyramids may have been built by, you know, extraterrestrials, like, I don't go there necessarily. I don't think that's even necessary.
It's not necessary.
However, the humans who were here were empowered with 360 senses and 12-strand DNA, not two, and able to connect with higher level energies. And so it's about refinement versus densification.
Yes.
And so there's a saying, faster can see slower, but slower can't see faster. So all
right.
of those dense school systems are saying, oh, come on, you can't see a ghost, you can't see an energy field. What do you mean? That's lens flare. But actually, what they're telling us is that they're dense.
All right.
Right? And so
that's
people
right.
who have higher levels of consciousness who can access this stuff basically
yes.
will look at someone who doesn't have the ears to hear it or the eyes to see it, and they'll go silent.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Because faster can see slower, but slower can't see faster. And I think
yep.
that that's a pretty good way of describing why there's kind of us and them, if you will.
Yep, yep. When I was studying Gurdjieff 30 or 40 years ago, what his common saying was that the lower cannot see the higher. And
yeah.
that is the same thing as that you were saying, that the higher realms are faster and they become invisible to the lower. And that just continues on. I don't know how far. I mean, I can only guess, but...
Well, speaking about Gurdjieff, Oscar Chazo in the Eureka Institute actually used his work. And when he was talking about dense people, he would say they had 6,000 beliefs. And then people who were a little bit more savvy would have 3,000. And then you start to get a little bit more aware, and he called it Saint Ego, 1,500 beliefs. And it goes on like that, and when you get really into what he called enlightenment, you're down to 3.
Ooh.
There is a God, you know, there's a higher source. You know, I don't even know what these 3 are. But it's not a, but the thing is what the powers that be are shoveling beliefs at us.
Oh, my God, yes.
Right? And
yes.
so the more we free our minds, and then people say, well, it's a good thing you have strong beliefs. And I'm like, you don't have to believe it. Either it's
right.
the truth or it isn't. It's
right.
not about adopting something else. But that's how church, religion, the education system, everything is just, yeah, giving us more and more and more beliefs. But now, you know, with the education system, it's not about fact-finding. We've got internet and we've got iPhones, applications. Any fact can be accessed instantly,
mm.
right? But it's about knowing. And this is what the Egyptians were all about, is like knowing that you know. Cultivating states of deep knowing where it's absolutely unquestionable. And this includes like being very, very tuned in. And this is what's happening to us. Like years ago, you know, the phone would ring before we had, well, not even looking at caller ID, and we would know who it was.
Mm-hmm.
I would know. Now mm-hmm. more and more people are able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But years ago, it was only a few people who could do that.
But,
you know what I'm saying? And so
we're
increasing
absolutely.
Our abilities, and more people are getting on this. And there's some people ahead of the game, and there's some people behind, but I think that everybody's becoming more psychic.
Well, you know, part of that, I think you talked about this earlier, maybe in the other show, has to do with the strengthening or developing or of the right brain, which is the intuitive feminine side. And it's the more artistic side, whereas the left side is the masculine, type A personality that goes into business and wears suits and so on and so forth. Everything is orderly. And it's intuitive.
Go ahead.
You know, it's in the intuitive side that feels things and picks up information. We may not know what that information is, but we know there's something. And every time you feed that and you pay attention to it, it's like working out at the gym.
Yep.
It's like developing your psychic muscles.
Yep. Yep.
And, you know, ever since I was a kid, I've been empathic. And, you know, I had years when I didn't pay much attention to it. But I finally figured out that, gee, when I pay attention to it and listen to it and follow it, I always learn something new and it works out a lot better. So, you know, and then it's like when you don't, you open that door and there's a monster in the closet. And you knew there was going to be a monster in there, but you just had to open the door just to see for yourself. So,
yeah. So there's that. Okay, what you've just said there with left brain dominance is basically what the patriarchy has emulated. And
yes.
matriarchy isn't the opposite of patriarchy, where we then go and get right brain dominant. Matriarchy
yes.
insists on a balance. And this is what you see over and over again in the symbolism of ancient Egypt. So the masculine is papyrus and the feminine is lotus. Mm. And the masculine is the Jed, or the spinal cord of Osiris, and the feminine is what they call the Teat, which is two arms down of an Ankh. And you see two of one, two of another, two of one, two of another, double feminine, double masculine. Mm. And then there's a third aspect of this, the vulture, which is the feminine, and the snake, which is the masculine. Mm. And so you see on King Tut's mask, the vulture and the snake, the vulture and the snake together. You see the winged disc, which is the wings of the vulture, and then the snakes on the side, over and over and over. So the idea, and especially at the lintel of going into a temple, so the lower self surrenders to the higher self, the masculine and the feminine come together. So I did my master's research on the hemispheres of the brain, mm-hmm. and it's about the corpus callosum, which is the mediator between the two. If you get stuck in either side, you've got nothing. And so creative thinking involves getting a hunch in the left brain, kind of going into some kind of trance. Like a lot of scientists, they give up. They're on their way to sleep, and they get the insight. So uh-huh. you're kind of you get into an altered state, and you get the illumination,
uh-huh.
the incubation, illumination, and then you've got to cross back into the left side of the brain for verification.
Right.
And so if you don't have the interaction, you really don't have anything. And so there is a crown, which has mysteriously disappeared out of the Egyptian Museum, but we won't talk about how and why that's going on. But it had like a snake-like serpentine going across the midbrain, and it's plain as day. And when you look at the scarab, it's like a skull, two sides of the brain, frontal lobes, and all of it's connected. And so it's not about anything being out of balance. It's about everything working together. And it makes sense. It makes perfect sense.
Well, now, what about the reptilian brain? How does that affect us, and where did that come from? And there's so much talk about reptilians, on so different, many different levels that it's hard to escape it.
Yeah, the ones who are rubbery all the way through is what I call them. The reptilian, the draconians, they tend to be heartless, right? Cruel,
yep.
bloodthirsty,
yep.
and rubbery. And not refined.
Yeah.
And so the reptilian brain has our most basic instincts. Sexuality, survival, that sort of thing.
Right.
And so we still are those beings. But we have the same DNA as the ancient Egyptians did. And so we can either, feed what's lower.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And so we still have that part of ourselves. And it can be useful. But we've got to develop everything and develop the
right.
higher centers. So
right.
we can't just get stuck in the lower chakras. We can't just get stuck in our reptilian brain.
Right.
We've got to be exercising all the capacity. And Hakim, who's an indigenous wisdom keeper who's passed now, who's
oh,
in
yeah.
the Pyramid Code, is talking about full spectrum senses that were dumbed down to five, but that the ancients almost had handles between them. So synesthesia is hearing a picture,
mm-hmm.
That sort of thing, and babies can have it. I've done a
mm-hmm.
lot of research on this, and it's just a higher functioning of the senses. And then, of course, we were even told that we couldn't write with our left hand if we were right brain dominant, and
they
slap a silly entire hand behind our back, so that we had everything has fed, including reading, writing, arithmetic, and the way the school system is, and test driven and hierarchical,
yeah.
so the teachers at the front and all of that. Is not about empowerment, constructivism. Pretty much everything you see on TV is deconstructing.
Yes.
Killing, taking away, not building and being creative and empowering. So people are disempowered.
Yeah.
And they feel helpless. And they're miserable because of that. And it's happening worldwide where people just can't take any more stress.
Yeah.
Or any more inflation.
Yeah.
They just can't cope anymore.
Yeah.
And that was pretty scary in Egypt. The pollution is abominable. I'm planning another trip in November of 2011, and we'll make it and we'll go. But I've been going over there since '77, and I have never ever experienced the pollution the way it was. It was like flying through mustard, and that's not very attractive. And
all
yet
right.
these sacred sites, are there. There are purer places along the Nile. And the real monuments are still speaking to us, and so I think it's important if anybody feels triggered to come to Egypt to get on with it and do it quickly,
right?
Because things are closing down; it's becoming more difficult.
And things
to get
are disappearing.
Around.
as well. Some people theorize that the powers that be, or the powers that were, the government, whatever, the elite, know that there's going to be some kind of shake-up, disaster, whatever you want to call it, some possible movement of the Earth. And the movie 2012 depicted this as duplicating the masters, and then they were running them into vaults underground, you know, so that the rich could escape in these enormous ships. And that's not unlike what I suspect is happening today.
Right, and I think I might coin that, the powers that were. That's much more empowering, actually. I like it.
Cliff High invented that one.
Pardon me?
Cliff High invented that one.
Oh,
I can't
take
credit for it.
All right, well, thanks, Cliff. I was going to make another comment there. So at 2012, though, when you see the predictions for disaster with all these 2012 Armageddon things, they're taking footage of a tsunami that happened, an earthquake that happened, hurricanes, right?
Yeah.
The prediction is old footage. We don't know that everything's going to shake apart, and there's plenty of people that are thinking, you know, and we went through Y2K, fear,
right,
and nothing happened. But, you know, people also say, oh, so what? We're in the seventh day of the Mayan calendar. You know, I don't feel anything. And the collective and the energy takes it, thinking through it differently and experiencing it for ourselves takes a while.
Yeah.
And I know the energy shifted. I just find there's many changes. And to me, the sacred, the Holy Grail of the Sacred Feminine is a phenomena. I mean, the Norway Spiral was a phenomena. There's things that are shifting. And I think we have to be open to the fact that maybe Mother Earth has shrugged her shoulders, and maybe she'll continue to shrug. And we're not really sure about the dates, but I think that we've seen a lot falling apart, and to think it's going to get worse and worse and worse, I mean, I don't know how much worse it can get.
I know. So. I know. Well, yeah, I agree with you on that one. I do look forward to a return of the Divine Feminine and the balance that it can create for all of us, and a raising of consciousness. You know, this does seem to be the densest period. Even since I was born in 1950, it seemed that things were more open and more compassionate and loving, and people cared about each other, and I know that hasn't gone away.
No, real people are beautiful. I've been to 52 countries, and people are, they all want the same thing, love.
Absolutely.
And respect. And it's not the people of the world that are causing these problems.
No.
And if you've got children, especially women, you're not going to go out and shoot somebody else's kid.
No.
You know, and so it's when you're disconnected and full of propaganda and, you know, fear-based that you end up behaving in a different way. And
that's
so,
right.
Yes. So, you know, we really have to just allow the beauty to come out. But, I mean, it's pretty hard. It's pretty hard when people, you know, when everything's falling apart around you.
Yes, and you've got so many different grids interfering with, you know, causing interference patterns with your ability to perceive. You know, there's the HARP technology, and as I said, there are chemtrails, there's the food is being manipulated, the mercury in the water, and I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. And so, you know, the television, I just watched another program about how there are certain ways that we're hypnotized, and you know, the information is given to us pretty much without our knowledge. And so it's a tough rap,
yeah,
but
sure.
I think that, you know, if we couldn't make it, we wouldn't have come here in the first place.
Well, and fluoride in our water makes us docile so that we don't protest and all of that.
Right.
And we're having this conversation from a knowledge base of the chemtrail and point in the sky, and there it is.
Yeah.
Right? And of true information. Yeah. However, when I look out my eyes, I see birds, I see flowers, I breathe fresh air.
Right.
And I find myself kind of going, whoa, 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 whoa. There's no problem in this moment.
Right.
Right here, outside,
that's right,
in my day.
That's right.
And so, you know, then I toy with the idea of not listening, you know, not doing the interviews and all of that. And we need to be informed.
Right.
And so people like you and I can't leave it alone. However, I think we need to notice that there is a lot of beauty and love and kindness.
Yes.
There's a
yes.
tremendous amount of kindness.
Yes.
And sometimes somebody in the, you know, on a path in the woods smiles and lights up your whole world.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And so that's real humanness and Mother Nature.
Yes.
And
yes.
the rest of it is superimposed upon us.
Yes.
Sending, as you say, interference patterns. However, yogis can eat glass and walk on fire.
Yeah. Right.
You know, there's a possibility. Right. You know, I used to have this card in my wallet, and I kept it there till it absolutely fell apart. And it was, be realistic, plan for a miracle.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. I agree with that. And how many times have you been watching, say, a television show that without commercials, let's say, and just something comes through that just seems like, feels like divine providence. It just seems like a direct message from some higher realm. That happens all the time.
You bet it does.
Sorry. Yeah, I think that synchronicity is the rule and not the exception. And as we true up our ability to perceive things accurately and remove the interference patterns, we move into a field of synchronicity where we begin to notice how things interconnect and are intertwined and are very personal to us.
Absolutely. And then there's following your intuition. So Monday morning I got up and I came straight from, you know, getting ready and sat down at the computer and turned on Starry Night. And, you know, I'm kind of like having a conversation like, what are we doing here? And then, you know, what about Cygnus? And, okay, Supergalactic Grid. And I just started clicking things along, and then I started experimenting with it, and I thought, did I just discover something here?
Wow.
So that night I went out to a meditation with Peter Tung from Voice America, who interviewed me, and he happens to live in Victoria. And, you know, he is very well informed, and he's leading us through this meditation. And all of a sudden, I felt like I was personified in the body of Nui, and these five different spaces of the phases of the sun or whatever in her body became the chakras, and then they become, you know, and then I thought, oh my God, I'm experiencing this supergalactic zodiac.
Wow.
And then I came back and I spent the day, you know, verifying, which is exactly the process I was talking about, where you have a hunch,
mm-hmm,
and then you
mm-hmm.
incubate, and then you get the illumination, and then you go back to verify. And so I'm not ready to publish it just yet because I want to make sure I've got it every which way. But it's like, I've been staring at this stuff for 35 years.
Yeah.
And the question's been, why does Isis have a bird on her head? And so in the meditation, I'm like, that's why. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And so if we are open and we keep doing our homework and keep breathing fresh air and stay close to nature, then perhaps we will just all end up with insights that, and we are. I mean, I think that many people are, as long as we don't entrench ourselves and buy into the fear. But, you know, if you lose your house and you lose your job and who knows what else you can lose, you lose your health, you know, and then, you know, you're broke because of your, you know. Like,
yeah.
It's kind of hard to stay optimistic, however people do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, these trials are, maybe they're trials by fire and part of the purification process of learning what's of value and what's not of value. And the material realm is only of value if you're using it and it does not have control of you. And in the world that I see, for the most part, it's kind of running the world. It's running us. But a lot of people are turning away from that and turning within to learn how to get in touch with the spiritual side.
Yep, more people are doing yoga. More and more people are meditating.
Yeah.
More
listening
and more people
to shows
are doing
like
exercise,
this.
Listening to shows.
Yeah.
And so there's momentum.
Now, a question for you on the supergalactic grid. I just had a thought. If we're going through all these different cycles, let's just assume that the Mayan cycles are all legitimate and they're accurate. Several cycles are completing at the same time, 13,000 year, 26,000 year, it goes on to millions, and then there's a 16.5 billion year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And as I understand it, they're all turning over like an odometer at 99.999 to zero in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible that we would could move into a 13th sign of the zodiac, or an entirely new zodiac that is on the other side of the of the galaxy, because we're going to be tipping into the other side of the galactic plane, for one thing. We've never been there before, as far as I know. It could be a whole new physics. It could be a whole new dimension. It could be a parallel, it could open parallel universes. I mean, aren't all kinds of things possible as a result of this?
What an awesome question. Okay, so when you say we're tipping into a different plane, we've been in the photon band, and
right.
We tipped into it, and then the whole solar system came in, and then we started to see different colored spectrums, purple added into rainbows, green spectrum in the sky. We have tipped. But the other thing, too, is that, if you think of all these different cycles, Dan Winter on his website has a bunch of different cycles, and then when they all come to zero, as you said, 99990, it's almost like the chakras all open up. Like, we're one cycle, another, but when you go flat, it's almost like, imagine all the chakras aligned at the zero point, then we have a ladder into the next reality. So after the 12th dimension, it's not the 13th dimension. It's another universe.
Yes.
It's the beginning of another game.
Yes.
Now, the world tree and the dark rift, you see symbols over and over and over again in Egypt and through the Mayan stuff of this seedling, and they're pouring water on the seedling. And the thing is people say, well, why is the Mayan calendar ending? Like, don't they have, didn't they have, they run out of stone on the edge of it? And it's because we are starting over.
We'll be writing our own.
If it is conscious co-creation.
Yeah, yeah.
Then we have to be in the driver's seat and lead it somewhere.
Right.
The zero point. Okay, the other thing that people say, it's a reset button.
Right.
And
right.
So everything that you already had is gone. You push a button, you start over. Reboot the computer.
Mm-hmm.
The power goes out for a second, and all the numbers are flashing on your coffee maker and everything, and it's zero.
And the viruses are broken down and killed.
Yeah. And so the thing is, though, is if you get there and go, now what, then you're not creating it.
Right.
And so I think, thought is creative. And they talk about, collective visualization and the 100th monkey and worldwide meditations and this sort of thing. Now, that can, I suppose, be dangerous if depending on what kinds of thoughts are really going in. But, negative thinking, what we talk about, we think about, and what we think about, we bring about.
Absolutely.
When people say, oh, I'm never going to be able to do that. Oh, I'm so stupid. I had such a blonde day or whatever. We're basically programming ourselves.
Right.
So to say, positive things to ourselves, positive things to one another, we can retrain and entrain ourselves to see the magic and the beauty, and the earth can heal itself.
Yeah.
And we're still getting pounded by interference patterns.
Yes, but hopefully
because
not
we're
long.
On the pardon?
And hopefully not for long.
Yeah, but it's because we're on the verge here.
Yeah, yeah.
Of figuring
it's
it
a
all
good
out.
Sign. I would take it as a good sign. It's not a pleasant sign, but I would take it as a good sign.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, it's very, very interesting times. We've got to be incredibly careful here.
Yes.
Because doom and gloom, doom and gloom. Well, is it? Or is it magical?
Right, right, right. I say magical.
I say magical, too. I think
well, when I look at your pictures, I see magic. So
well, and
when
something manifests, and I've had many experiences with manifestation, like literally, the brain goes crazy, maybe the ego part or whatever.
Mm.
Oh, well, it must be lens flare. Or whoa, whoa, whoa. Well, why is it moving and the pyramids are in the same place?
Yes.
What is it? What is
right.
it reflecting? It's the size of the pyramid. I mean, come on, why so big? And it is a shape, and everybody who looks at it, the thing is that I've only shown the picture to maybe six people. And this is hot off the press here. And because I wasn't, wasn't exactly sure how to handle what it is because it's a phenomenon. But I heard your reaction when you opened those pictures, and people kind of go, oh, What is it? Yeah. Like, they don't start arguing and saying, oh, yeah, lens flare, but your camera doesn't work very well.
Right.
It's beautiful and phenomenal. Like the
Oh, my God, yes.
The thing is, hello.
We're running out of time.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, that's a good thing we set up next week to continue.
Okay.
I wish we could go on.
Well, you and I have very good conversations, and I'm
I love talking to you, Carmen. You're one of my favorite people on the planet. And would you want to just mention your website so that people can go there and sign up for the pictures and get your DVD as well?
Yeah, it's pyramidcode.com. And what's coming up is pay to download, like The Secret had. In not long at all, the delivery was December 1st, and so soon there'll be a button where you can you don't have to wait for the DVD to come, and it's probably going to be better quality anyway. So you
Wonderful.
Can pay to view and pay to download. So that's really exciting. And,
well, that's wonderful. And, Carmen, I just had a wonderful time talking to you, and I thank you so much for sharing yourself with us all. And I look forward to next week. And just for the listeners, real quickly, if anybody has burning questions, you can write me at zanymystic59@yahoo.com. So thanks, everybody. Thank you, Carmen. And we will have some more fun next Saturday.
Okay. Thanks, Lance.
All right. So good night.
Good night.